put this festival on, you bastards, with a lot of love. We worked for 1 year for you pigs. And you want to break our walls down? And you want to destroy it? Well, you go to hell.
Good evening, everyone. It's not Sunday, it's Monday. Oh, God, where do we go? It's the Fat Back Four. It's episode 8. The usual crew are with me. I'm Gav, your host. Ian, Grizz and Matt to discuss Tottenham 4, Liverpool 1. Absolute disaster from start to finish. Before we start, though, I'd just like to say a big thank you to everyone that turned up for the Day Tripper show yesterday. Great day. Great crowd. David Fairclough was an absolute gent. Signed books, posters, anything you wanted. A really good day, and hopefully the first of many. So thanks to everyone for showing up and showing your support on the day. I'm trying to stay away from this match as I possibly can, but there's just, I can't. We have to get into it. Grizz, mate, I'm going to come to you first. That was just pathetic from start to finish, wasn't it?
It was bad, wasn't it? It was bad. Usually in every game, when at the end of the game where you try to assess it, the first thing you do is try to get the positives out of the way, if there's any. Do you know what I mean? Before you start talking about the negatives. But I'm with Jurgen Klopp that was so demoralizing. You know, he said in the press conference, I really don't want to talk about any positives. Like someone, I think, suggested something about Salah's contribution or something. He said, look, I don't really want to talk about the positives. I felt exactly like that. It was for me personally, I think it was on a par, maybe not as worse, but as on a par with the Stoke away performance under Rodgers. Because looking at that team that day, you know, you'd maybe expect them to lose that like that, but I did not expect the lineup. When the lineup was announced, we had a whole week, sort of near enough, bar Mane, and who else was missing?
I think Klein, it was Lallana.
Okay, yeah, Klein, Lallana. But it was a strong lineup. It was a fairly strong lineup. Gomez came in instead of Trent. The back four was fairly stable. It's been like that recently, you know. And that first 45 minutes, I didn't know what I was watching. It was amateur Sunday league stuff, Gav, man. I was lost. I was absolutely lost, just like the Liverpool back four was. I just didn't know. I mean, Tottenham are a very, very good team. But the saddest part and the hardest part to take is they didn't really have to play well to score those goals. And that's the hardest part to take.
Yeah, I think they did play well, to be honest with you, and they punished us again because...
No, the goals... No, they played well. Their game plan was spot on. They were they played like how we normally play in the first 20 minutes, half an hour. But yeah, their goals weren't as a result of brilliant attacking football. It was shocking, abysmal defending.
But the thing is, none of the goals we concede are from really, really good football. Like, go back and look at them all this season, and they're very hard to pick out.
Mental.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And bar 15 minutes or so after we scored, I thought Spurs controlled us, even when they weren't playing as well. They controlled us for the whole game. But anyway, Matt, when I look at the game, one thing that stuck with me after the game was, you know, we've heard about Jurgen Klopp backing these players and believing in them. Do you think this could be a watershed moment where he decides, no, do you know what, I was wrong. We need to change things and we need to change things drastically. Is it that bad? Was yesterday that bad?
It has to be, mate. It can't be any difference. I mean, we've had watershed moments for a long time now. We've been watching these players for 4 years. He's only been watching them for two. But for some of them, Lovren, I mean, I don't really want to go into the usual suspects because it's just the same shite every week. The Lovren, Mignolet, Matip, and just this. I wanted to see people outside of that, the not so obvious ones, which everyone picking up. For me, massively, big thing is Jordan Henderson. He's meant to be protecting that back four, and he's just not doing it. I mean, I was talking on WhatsApp the other week, and the other day, I was saying, if you look at his performances, how many times does he actually make like a good defending run, like a track back and a tackle, or not even that, because that means he's out of position. How many times does he actually defend a good space, and do you know what I mean, and push someone back? He doesn't do it. You used to see Mascherano doing it, and Haman and all them, and he just doesn't offer that. He's okay on the ball. He's not amazing on the ball, but he's not shite, like I say a lot. He's not that bad. But that's only 50% of that position. It's not the full game. And I'm putting a lot of blame on our defence, on him. I know the others are shite, so I'm not saying it's not their fault. They're absolutely fucking wank. But he has to be part of that as well. And he will go unnoticed in all of this, I think.
I've heard people say Henderson played quite well. I don't think anyone played well. I think Salah had his moments, but...
Henderson, like, he scores. Do you know why people are saying that? He put a good ball through. In fact, he put a couple of good balls through. And I'm not saying that wasn't good. He's okay at that side. He will pull a few good balls through. He will rotate it. But as I said, that's 50% of that position. It's not the 100%. So he's doing 50% okay. It's not enough. It's not enough for what we need at the back there. I mean, everyone knows I do like Emre Can, but I don't think he's got enough at the moment there. I'm not talking about getting him in to get rid of Hendo. I'm talking about getting someone in who can do that role properly. And like Mascherano, Haman, when's the last time we had one of them where you look at them and think, looking how they're not going to get through too much, are they?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, and it is half of the game. He does put a great ball through for Salah to score, but I just thought we were overran all over the pitch. We are bypassed a lot throughout the game, and like you said, when we hand out chances, they took them. Ian, when you go away in these games, for me, it's either start quick or start solid, and we done neither, and within 3 minutes we're one down, and it's just the start of a calamitous day for me, for the three lads that I've said I have no confidence in. But did that even take you by surprise how early we looked so, so nervous in the game and so hesitant in everything we were doing? Did you think, no, you can expect that one simple ball and you can expect it all to fall apart?
No, mate, even by our standards, that was shoddy. Do you know what I mean? We can make individual mistakes, but the first goal, I was watching the game with my mates at a West Ham fan, and he was like, I love watching Liverpool Spurs. He's always proper go at it. And the pair of us were just talking about how good David De Gea was. I don't know why we were talking about him. And then Lovren gets himself in the worst position I've ever seen a centre-back get himself in for a throw-in. He's on his wrong foot. He's facing the wrong way. He looks like he's trying to play offside from a throw-in, which is impossible, which is the most basic of rules. They then do like the stupidest little chip over him, like a sand wedge over him. And then Mignolet comes out, and then halfway through getting out, remembers he's a shithouse and doesn't do anything. And then, and I just turned around to me, mate, after like 3 minutes, and I went, we're going to get mullered today. And I never think that. It was just so, so poor. I don't think I've ever... I can't remember, and I mean this as well, I can't remember a worse collective performance in the first 30 minutes than our two centre-backs and our keeper.
Yeah.
Mainly the two centre-backs. But I can't remember a worse performance under any Liverpool side, and I mean that as well. And Matip gets away with a lot of shit because Lovren is even worse. But the last few games...
Yeah, go on. No, go on.
The last few games, Matty has been dog shit as well. But it gets overlooked a little bit because of Lovren's standard. But even he brought Lovren off, but he could have just brought Matty up as well. Because Matty got just as bad as Lovren.
He said that, didn't he?
He actually said that. Yeah, he actually said that, yeah.
It was horrific.
But you see, the thing that the difference with them is, lads, Lovren, you can visually watch him falling apart. He's mentally falling apart right in front of your eyes.
Oh, mate, that header.
Have you heard Have you heard about what's going on in his private life, Lovren?
Yeah.
He shouldn't be playing. If you trust me, right? If your wife has an affair and takes your kids away from you, allegedly, you just want to lie down and cry. Trust me when I tell you that. You do not want to play in front of 80,000 fans with the best, one of the best strikers in Europe, like slobbering all over you, literally, in Gary Cahill's. You know what I mean? So, he's credit to him for wanting to play, but Klopp needs a smack on up the arse for thinking that he's mentally ready to play. Like that second goal, where he goes for that header. Have you ever played FIFA and you're controlling the wrong man and you think you know what I mean? And you're looking at the wrong player and another player just runs into the crowd. That's what it was like. He missed it by that much.
Yeah, but you see, Ian, I want to go back to the fourth goal, right? And, you know, people are going to say, oh, you're slaughtering Lovren. I am slaughtering Lovren and I'm going to slaughter a few of them tonight. But like you said, the position he gets himself in, it's not so much the position he gets himself in, but when that ball is chipped, he's standing looking at the linesman for offside without knowing where any other three of his defenders is, right? It goes over the top. He then, instead of running, turns again to the linesman as if to say, are you going to put that flag up? Mignolet has no business being out there. None whatsoever. I don't know what he's doing out there.
I think he's been listening to our pod, Gav, and we've kind of gone to his head and he's, you know, we've been criticising him not coming out.
And yeah, but he's no business coming out, because if you watch, Kane gets that ball on the corner of the box, okay? But if you watch Matip, there's no go in Matip to go and say, I'm going to sort him out. And even when Mignolet, like, as Ian says, he bottles it, and he nearly goes fucking past the ball. It's ridiculous.
He does, yeah.
And Matip makes a half-hearted attempt at trying to block it when he should be throwing himself out in front of it.
Well, before that, right, you've got Lovren, who doesn't look like he knows what sport he's playing for the first goal. And then you've got Mignolet, who runs out and then remembers he's got no nuts, so shits himself. Either come out fully or don't come out at all.
I don't mind the keeper coming out, but fucking go for it. He hesitates. Exactly.
And then as for Matty puts his hand up and plays offside. Like, it's just the three of them are just like...
Clown.
But you see, my argument to it is, right, is that there's no communication. And even if that ball goes over the top and you think he's offside, you just keep playing. If he's offside, the flag will go up and you'll know better.
Mate, it's the first thing you're taught as like an 8, 9-year-old, isn't it? Play the whistle. Yeah. It's so basic.
Yeah. But, Matt, I wanted to ask you, when it came to this goal, we're three minutes into the game, that shouldn't be happening 3 minutes into a game, should it? That little chip ball, and he's in on goal 3 minutes into a game from a throw-in when we should be, like I said, trying to be solid. Did you think, oh, here we go, and, you know, you were proved right because it just got worse and worse and worse?
I'm usually fairly, upbeat about our games. Even when we went 1-0 down, I was all right about it. And then 2-0...
I'm usually pissed.
Yeah, I was. Even 2-0, I was like, it's fucking shy. I was fuming yesterday, to be fair, compared to what I usually am. But then we got the goal back, and I was like, all right, we can do this. And we just absolutely crumbled. It's like, they are the instances where you've got the goal back, and then you need people on the pitch to know what
to do. Your boy Emre.
Ah, mate, he was bad as well. Honestly, everyone on it was about two people
but
on that pitch.
We'll probably come to it. Sorry, but
yeah,
putting Emre at right back was.
Why didn't he put Millie there?
Grizz.
Can I ask you something, Grizz? You're talking about putting Jean at right back, and a lot of people in the pub with us were saying, "Oh no, the obvious one is Oxlade-Chamberlain on, and you move Milner to right full." The obvious thing to do is to take Lovren off and put your centre half that's on the bench on. But that's the standard we're at now, where
it's no confidence.
We're shifting, exactly, we're just shifting people around now instead
or,
of going.
Yeah, or you take Lovren off and put Trent
on. Centre back. I'm going to put
Gomez
across.
But that's dangerous. That's an experience, isn't it? Trent and Gomez right next to each other.
Yeah, no, and I've said that before, we don't really want to
We'd probably concede four if we had them, like.
But lads,
I think he didn't put on Clavon because just because of Son's Son and Kane's pace.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. And you're forgetting that Clavon is shit as well.
That's exactly it. He didn't put Clavon on the pitch because Clavon's not good enough.
Yeah.
All right, so he's trying to shift two and three players around the pitch. Grizz, we spoke about this, and we've done it on a few occasions with regards to Liverpool defenders and the whole team when we're defending, thinking about what we're going to do in our next attack, right? Instead of defending the ball. There can't be any clearer case than that second goal. There can't be any clearer case when a ball is going that far and Lovren, instead of defending the situation, I don't even know what he's trying to do. Like, did you think you had to adjust your screen when you're seeing that happening, or did you think, no, that's just standard shit now?
I don't know, honest to God, the ball's in Lloris's hands, right? Mm-hmm. Was it a corner, wasn't it, or a free kick or something?
No,
like
it was just a cross, wasn't it?
A cross,
was it just a normal cross?
Oh, it was a cross after a free kick or a corner. They kind of played it around and then put it
in the box.
And
so it just shows you, right? So they've totally caught us, like, sort of, they're thinking, okay, we could... Lloris is automatically looking at Kane. As soon as he gets the ball, he's looking in that right centre-back, left-back area where Kane stayed all game because he knew he's going to terrorise Lovren and Moreno, that space in between then.
It's what Vardy does to us as well. Leicester and Vardy do the exact same thing.
And Lovren thinks he's Superman or doing the Matt will know Soldier Boy move. Right?
Oh,
because what is he doing? He's just like a... How badly he mistimes it is bad. Because imagine if he got a little glance on it and sort of went out for a throw-in or something, you could have said, ooh, the crowd would have said, ooh, and, you know, you could have got away with it. But and people giving Kane credit, like, he checked where Lovren's place was, he ran in behind, what... No, come on. He did not expect a centre-back who's playing in the Premier League miss a throw-in from the keeper. It travelled about 50, 60 yards, that throw. Any centre-back, not even a top centre-back, any fucking Sunday League centre-back just heads that out. And if he doesn't head it out, you just bring the player down and take the yellow card and you block him off, you do anything. As what did Klopp say? Even if he was on that pitch, Kane doesn't get that ball. But he just makes a half-hearted, just swan-like little attempt. And then
when the ball's in the air, it's like Harry Kane said to Lovren, I'll give you 50 quid if you try and win this header, doing an impression of a cheese string. Because he's got no arms. He just goes up like an ice pop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's like a trout out coming out of the water.
He is. Yeah, it's abysmal.
I think he's gone up. No, like, this is what happened. He's gone up. And he's wanted to go through the back of Kane. It's like he's let that first one in. He wants to go through the back of him. You know, like sometimes he does. He thinks he's all out.
Yeah, but Matt, do it. Yeah, but do it, Matt. He didn't do that either.
Exactly.
Can I ask you something, Matt?
You climb all over Kane and you drop him to the floor.
Exactly.
You take the free kick and you regroup.
The thing is, in his head, he's wanted to do that.
I would have piggybanked him.
His body can't do it. Like, he's not good enough to do it. So he's wanted to do it and he's just looked like an absolute tit because he can't do it. He's not good enough.
Well, Matt, you've said what you think he's trying to do. To me, it looked like, again, no confidence in himself or the person playing beside him because he's worried that if Kane gets the ball into his feet, the game might get exposed. So he's trying to be proactive in the fucking most fucking weirdest way I've ever seen in my life. But again, he's trying to be this, like you said, this hero. You know, I'm going to go up and I'm going to win this ball from Kane and I'm going to put us back on the front foot.
That's why doing the Superman.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but when you were watching it, when you were watching it, right, and even the replays of it, is there any stage where you're thinking, even watching the replays, going, yeah, I can understand that why he's gone for that because he's not far off it. He's miles
far away. It's terrible.
I'm telling you, literally, he thinks Kane's going for that and he wants to go in the back of him. That's what he's doing. It's absolutely fucking dreadful.
Yeah, but you have to realise...
Yeah, but you know what? The worst thing...
Kane to go for that ball. Kane would have to be about 9'8" and jumping really high in the air.
I know, mate. It's awful. It's just... The worst thing is, I'm used to it. Do you know what I mean? It was... head and hands. Do you know, like,
Matt, do you know,
fucking
Matt,
laughing
do you know
again.
Question, do you know we had a little bit of a, we had a little bit of a debate again when we played City,
yeah,
for that first, for that goal where we said the centre backs, one should be marking, one should be sweeping.
Yeah,
do you know? Do you remember that we had that little debate?
Yeah, Gav wants them 25 yards back. Is that the one?
Yeah, I mean, is there any? Is there any debate or argument that Matip should be closer?
He should be covering.
In case
we were talking,
there is something like that, and he should be able to cover around. Okay, you can imagine Moreno probably put the cross in, or he's probably up the field. Yeah, fair enough. But would you say there's again, like Ian said, is there blame attached to Matip that he should be quicker on the come round? Maybe
Matip absolutely, and Karius. I mean, and Mignolet. Both of them need to be covering that space in behind them. It doesn't matter which one gets to it. They both need to be expecting he's a fucking tool and he's going to miss this header. That's got to be going through their head. Do you know what I mean? It's got
to. That's a bad way of playing, though.
But no, not, wait. That's not just because it's Lovren. No, that's not just because it's Lovren. Every defender, if your other defender's like going, that, yeah, if he's going up for it, doesn't matter who he is, you've got to expect he might miss this. You can't just be standing there thinking he's going to head this back up the field. Even though we should have.
It's not just Matip or whoever should cover him, right? Moreno's just bombed up the left, put in a good crossover, and then he stays up in the next transition of play. So he's out of position, but you can't blame him for that because he can't be in two places at once, right? Yeah. So we've got three midfielders there. One of them has got to fill in at left back while Moreno is where he is.
That's where Henderson should be doing as the deepest. That's
whoever's
what I'm saying.
Doing it. Someone needs to cover him so then Lovren can move across and then we've still got some sort of shape. Whenever Moreno goes across the halfway line, we automatically go a man light at the back. It doesn't have to be that way. It's about transition. So if he takes the left wing position, then someone covers him at left back. It's the most basic of setups.
Right, yeah, but
go on, you go, I'll jump in.
We have criticised, and you know, rightly so as well, about Ginny on the ball and in terms of his play when we've got the ball. But you know, when out of possession, a lot of people credit Ginny for covering those type of plays, Ian.
He does it very well. He's the best in our side at doing it.
So we
miss that. Now, you can no way criticise Milner for trying to keep up with Son. Because bless Milner, he was proper looking at his feet, his own feet. Kind of like,
that's because he can't keep his head up. He can't keep his head up.
Matt, he was actually looking at his feet like, am I travelling? Because am I getting anywhere? Because Son was lightning, and Son is lightning.
Yeah, they're both
and
quick.
If you watch the replay, I think he even starts 10 yards behind him. So any criticism
he
does, doesn't he?
It does. But to be fair, Milner is very slow.
You can't blame Milner. Milner looks at his feet like, am I walking in sand here? But that's too late by then.
Wait there, lad. Because we're talking about midfielders.
Yeah, sorry,
so I had a look back over the last two seasons with how many we conceded with Hendo as a six, and how many we've conceded without. And with Hendo as a six, we concede 1.33 goals per game, and without him, it's 0.86, and that's 40 games versus 22. So it's a big sample on both sides to go on, and that's with him as a six.
So you're saying. You're saying Emery
as a more. I'm saying someone stat wanker. I'm saying anyone, someone else. Do you know what I mean? I don't like.
Well, we haven't got anyone else. The only other option, according to those samples, would probably been Emery.
I like Emery there, but he is going through bad form, so I'm not going to be shouting for it. Just anyone, man. I mean, fucking Grukic scored from a corner, so nice. Get him there.
We can't do that.
No. I know. Yeah, I would have Emery there. If he's up to it. But honestly, Hendo is a big thing on our defence, and it goes unnoticed because he's good at passing.
Matt, I agree with you 100%.
I do, sir. Yeah.
Just see on this second, like, I wanted to talk all now, and Ian, I'll be coming to you on it, but see the second goal yesterday, we talk about Lovren being the anti-salmon in the fucking sky. But and he doesn't do the simplest things, but to me, he should be just standing behind Kane and going, listen, I'm blocking off everything. I'll hold you up and my teammates can get back. When the situation happens that he misses the header because he's a clown and the ball goes through to Kane, the one thing that I noticed was Matip should be making a move as quickly as he possibly can towards his own goal, simply to shut off any kind of corridor for him to put that ball in. He doesn't. He hangs around and waits to see what happens. He tries to be too cute. But if he makes a move as quickly as he can, 20 yards back, he cuts off a pass. Okay, the pass might still go to Son, but he's goal side of him. Mignolet is stuck to a 6-yard line. He could come out and narrow an angle.
Well, Milner should read that play. Yeah.
Yes, I know Milner should read that play, but when it's opposed to
Mignolet.
Sorry, yeah. Okay. But Mignolet should read it and probably not get to the ball, but should be right on top of Son. But I don't think Son should get that opportunity. I think Matip should be forward or back. But
it's just a clap of the bears.
It's really simple stuff, and it's schoolboy stuff all the time. You know, like for me, if I was a defender and I see Kane breaking, I think, okay, where is this guy coming from and where are the chances of him scoring? The chance of him scoring is 18, 16, 17, 18 yards out. I need to get myself in that position. Like any centre-half will tell you, if a ball gets in behind, you get yourself to the corner of the 6-yard box because that's the chances are you cut a ball out. But there seems to be none of that. But anyway, look, the talk goal comes. Emre Can decides that he loses all power in his fucking legs and his brain and his feet disappearing each other. He gives away a free kick. But the thing about this free kick for me was Matip seems to be looking over at someone in the crowd as it's being taken. That's the first thing. And again, no communication from goalkeeper, either centre-half. Nothing at all. No communication. And the header is awful as well, isn't it? It's a header where you kind of go, Jesus Christ, anywhere but where you've put it. It's that bad.
Well, how many mistakes do you want in a row, right? You've got Emre Can thinking he's Cafu on the halfway, getting caught out in possession. Then he busts a gut to get back. There's a stupid tackle from behind where he probably possibly does get the ball, but it's still a foul. So then you've got him. Then you've got the ball getting floated over. They haven't even brought the defenders up for the cross.
Yep.
And like, we're set out. We've got like 8 men across the box. They've got like two.
They've 3 people in the box, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So we're set out, like, you know what I mean? That they've got a full complement of forwards or whatever. So that's not thinking on your feet. There's no one near communicating to say, right, we don't need fucking 8 players here. You go there. You know, there's none of that.
Yep.
So then the ball comes over towards the back post or towards that area. No one at all behind Matip. He's not aware that there's no one behind him, so he's an idiot. Mignolet is incapable of talking to Matip to say, let the fucking ball go. There's no one behind you. So then they don't communicate. So Matip then wins the header. And another thing that you taught when you're a kid playing centre-half is you head the ball up, high and away from your goal. You don't head it straight back into the middle of the pitch. This is an experienced international footballer who's played stupid amounts of games in the Bundesliga. Just heading it back up into the middle of the goal.
That's a bit harsh on him, you know.
Two players. You are?
That's a bit harsh on him, that he was running backwards and he kind of got the side of his head on it. He was facing the other way. He was running backwards to get it.
Yeah, but Matt,
I think it's terrible from Can. I don't think it's terrible from Mignolet. I think it's terrible from Matip. And like all 3 of them are as bad as each other.
You see, Matt, the thing is, if you watch the goal from behind the goal, right? As Spurs are lining this free kick up, you can only see. I think it's 3 Spurs players kind of spread across them with the box, right?
I've got it there.
Matip is standing. Yeah. Matip is standing. Looking,
do you know the reason for
the only player on his left-hand side is Harry Kane. He's the only player standing there. So when that ball comes in, all right, as Matip goes ahead, watch, I don't know, but if people go back and watch it, watch Kane's movement, okay? Kane is actually flat-footed because he doesn't go for the ball. He's actually flat-footed. Now, all Matip has to do there is go up, and when he's halfway up in the air, just don't head it.
Yeah, exactly.
It runs out for a corner and it goes. But Grizz, I wanted to come to you because that header does go up in the air and it drops to Dele Alli, and the reaction from air players is non-existent. They're nearly in the tunnel for fucking half time while this fella's striking a ball. You know what I mean? It's horrendous.
Do you know what the most frustrating part was? We had that was at 2-1, right? And that was the spell that you're referring to where we had them slightly rattled. Where, you know, there was about 5 to 7 minutes, right? And we've gifted them a free kick out of nowhere. And they don't want to be counter-attacked in the last minute of the half. They're happy going in 2-1 up. So
they've settled for 2-1 for half-time.
They've put none of their centre-backs forward.
We've settled for 2-1 as well, but not realising the fucking ball has gone into our box.
No, but we haven't.
That's our problem.
And we've blamed Matip, we've blamed Emre, and we've blamed Mignolet 100%. And we've blamed the skipper in that situation, saying, like, look, lads, there's fucking no one in the box, right? Man each and two men spare. That's all we need. And the rest around on the edge of the box if anything falls there. We've actually defended it like a last-minute corner. We've defended it like a last-minute corner. And we've retreated on the edge of our box for some strange fucking reason. Now, I'm going to blame Klopp in this scenario as well. He's bellowing and screaming 70, 80 minutes out of a game. Why hasn't he seen that and say, where the fuck are you going? Why are you retreating? There's no one to mark. It's Kane, Son, and Ali on the edge of the box. Just three of them, because they don't want to be counter-attacked in the last minute. They're actually shitting it, like, oh, we know their strengths. We don't want to be 2-1, and we regroup, and we go again. We've actually done the most shittest, dumbest set-piece piece of defensive setup there. It's unbelievable. I was screaming at the TV. I was thinking, there's no one to mark. Why have we got so many people in the line? Did you see how many people we had in the line? Like, we're doing our usual zonal bullshit.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason.
For me, it's on Miggs. That's his box. That's on him. That he sets them up.
He's looking at it all.
It's on him, mate. Effing.
Yeah, but it is on him. But you have to remember, I go back to this. As the free kick's being taken, Matip is looking at Kane. He knows the only person to the left-hand side of him is Harry Kane. And when the ball is coming in, as he's heading it, Harry Kane is literally flat-footed going, fuck, I didn't go for that ball. I should have went for it. I misread the situation.
they still
fucking give it back to him.
I reckon Matip was, you know, he's quite taller than Kane. And do you know, I've got that thing, you can't see everything. You know, he's jumped as well when he's tall. I don't think he knows where Kane is.
But it's actually scandalous.
You think because he's so far away from Kane, he can't see him?
he can't see him.
You're saying? You fucking remember, like,
he can't see him. He doesn't know where he is.
The other thing
he's in
the sky. we speak about leadership and leaders on the pitch and stuff like that. But part of being a leader, or part of being, you know, proactive for your team is when that ball's coming down out of the air, somebody just calls out their name and says it's mine and goes through it. The chap is in acres of space hitting that ball. It's unreal. But look, it goes 3-1 at half-time. We come out in the second half, and they put it to bed fairly quickly, I think, in the second half. Ian, goal number 4, and I don't know. Who do you want to blame this time?
Miggs.
It is Miggs, isn't it? It is. It's terrible goalkeeping. I mean, people around him don't help. But it's just terrible. And when you watch it, he comes out and tries to punch it and kind of tickles its balls a bit, but he doesn't even then he doesn't seem to call. Do you know what I mean? We've got the quietest defense in the Prem, honestly. No one takes ownership of anything. It's always like, right, if I just take care of my job, then it's fucking someone else's fault if we concede. It's not, there's no collective, you know what I mean, amongst them. They're not. Like, in the second goal, Lovren goes up for Eder. Matip's just holding his own position. He's not clever enough to think he's going to ball this up. Oh, it's just so frustrating, man. And it was the only word I can use. Well, I can use a lot of words, but one of the main words I can use, it was just embarrassing. It was embarrassing. It was like, I'm Klopp's biggest fan. You don't have to look long and hard to figure that out. But something drastically needs to change now. He's got a game on Saturday against Huddersfield where I would be amazed if he doesn't make at least 5 changes. I don't care who he puts in, I don't give a fuck. Because I reckon when he gets in the changes after that game, he's gone mental. On the sidelines, he just looked deflated, didn't he? It was like,
It looked to me when I was watching him, it looked like he was thinking, you know what, I've backed these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like he'd let him down for the last time.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was I backed them, and I'm being proven completely fucking wrong here.
Yeah,
but the gas thing was, Matt, no, it wasn't gas, it was far from funny, but when that ball comes in, like we all said, to me, that's a standard punch for any keeper.
Well, mate,
I'd even argue it's a standard catch.
But, yeah, he doesn't even have to go through a crowd to get to it. It's his own player.
You know, the thing is, he barely touches the ball. But the ball manages to knock him about fucking 11 feet to the right. What the fuck is going on there? Like,
it's because he's half gone for it. He's gone for a punchy flap.
Yeah.
Is that different from a...
No, that's
different.
I know the name of the show now. But no, it just seems to be a drama, doesn't it? It's like,
yeah,
okay. You went to punch, you barely hit the fucking thing. What are you doing on the ground?
Just,
you know what I mean?
He's got to come out and he's got to go through it. He's given a call, and you can tell he's given a call because the player who he knocks into ducks. So he has given a call, but he's shit himself because that player's there and he hasn't gone through him and been like, I've given you a call, you're not out the way, I'll take you out. He's shit himself and he's come and he's undecided and he's given it a half punch, half little slap, and that is it. It's everything Miggs is. It's everything our defence is in one fucking
goal. Do you know what, right?
It's undecisive.
As a goalkeeper, there's absolutely one prerequisite that you need as a goalkeeper. Forget your ability and all that. That's obviously all important. But the one thing you need is bravery. And he hasn't got any. He's a coward.
Yeah.
Doesn't he look like... To me, he looks like every time he goes to punt... Like, for me, I think he should catch it. But he always looks to me like when he goes to punch a ball or catch a ball, it's as if... He's nearly looking around to waiting for it to be hit. You know, waiting for that impact. And it
doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to do it because he's afraid of making a mistake. Rather than just in his head thinking, I'm coming for this, I'll punch it, we'll get back up and we'll reset. He's coming for it thinking, what if I fucking drop this? What if I don't punch it far?
Do you know,
I often backed him. Do you know, Gav, you probably know, because do you remember the back end of the season and I did back him? And I did say, look, he's an intelligent man off the pitch. So I think, you know, it seems to be that intelligence off the pitch. I think he's using it. He's become more intelligent on the pitch. He knows what to do and he's been practicing it. That was the most dumbest goalkeeping performance I've ever seen. Without him dropping, okay, you could say the punch was a clanger. That was a mistake. But without sort of letting a ball through his legs or something, do you know what I mean, like one of those clangers, that was one of the worst goalkeeping performances, just because of his decision making, just because of his lack of bravery, just because of his lack of organization, organizing his back four. And that's saying something. That was an awful goalkeeping performance. The first goal, as Ian says, you're coming out that far, why are you coming out that far? If you're going to come out that, take him out, wipe him out, make a forceful attempt at the ball. The second one, the second one where he should be, read any goalkeeper who played football at the highest level, or especially at a club like Liverpool where we're playing where our centre backs are on the halfway line, you sweep up. His starting position is poor again. The third goal, just before the half time, you tell your back four, why are you stepping on my fucking toes? Get away from me. There's no need to be this deep. It's, you know, they've got no one in. And the fourth goal, we've just said, that's four goals. You could entirely blame on Mignolet and it wouldn't be harsh.
Well, Grizz, to be honest with you, I've said this and I'm like a broken record now at this stage. If you're discussing Simon Mignolet, pros and cons, 10 games into a season, he's not good enough for Liverpool, and it's simple as that. Because we just keep fucking doing it. We keep doing it every season. We're having a pro and con debate
that.
About
yeah,
it. And
no, you're right.
I said this at the end of last season and I'm sick saying it. At the end of last season, if we're discussing this guy 10 games into next season, listen, forget it. The argument's over. Anyway, look, Grizz, I'll stay with you because just the last thing on the game. We've absolutely slaughtered everyone defensively. Attacking-wise, I thought we were poor, though. I don't know whether that's a mix of an off day, Spurs being really good, or just a nervousness throughout the team that, you know, we have to make every single thing count because at the other end, it's going to go tits up at any minute now. What did you make of us going forward overall in the game?
It's a combination of what you've just said, Gav. It's very difficult
it's very difficult as an attacking player to know, as you said, to that we've got to make every opportunity count because the fuckers at the back will mess this up. And it's like giving them a fucking head start, a two-goal head start every single time. And it does increase the pressure on already strikers and forwards in our team that are under pressure, that we're not scoring up. I know we scored seven. You know, it's funny saying that because we just scored seven against Maribor. But apart from that, we've been a bit weak, poor in front of goal as well. Minus Salah again. Look, you got to give credit. That's where you got to give credit to Spurs and Pochettino's setup. Did you see the way their fullback? All right, he just totally harassed the shit out of Phil every time he got the ball. Phil was forced to come infield. Phil was supposed to be playing wide left, but Trippier was on him like a rush all throughout that first half an hour. Phil tried to start dictating onto the ball in the midfield, which obviously he wasn't supposed to do because that, you know, gave us less options going forward because we had no apart from Salah, we had no one getting beyond the ball again. Apart from Salah Salah was our only shining light. You know, the goal, you know, a bit of a scuff finish, but you know he's always going to be there or thereabouts. They snuffed us out very comfortably, I thought. We did have a spell. We did have a couple of chances because we're always going to get chances. We're so good up front. We're always going to create chances. But I still haven't got confidence in us that we're going to take our chances. If you analyse Harry Kane's two goals, Gav, how often do you see our guy score those kind of goals? I mean, that poacher's goal that he scored, the second one, and we're talking about, we haven't discussed Kane because we don't give a shit about him, but we have to. He automatically kind of anticipates where the ball's going to fall, lets the ball hit his body, and he's just puts it in the back of the net. There's never any doubt that Kane's going to be there. Any fuck up, Kane's going to be there. You know, where our players are not, we haven't got that killer instinct. Bobby, we've discussed it, and we can discuss it until we're blue in the face. He hasn't got that killer goal-scoring instinct that, let's say, a Defoe or Harry Kane, you know, has. And that's where we can be lacking if our A game isn't on, which it wasn't.
Okay, Grizz, I think you've covered going forward in proper detail there, and you're right in what you're saying. To me, it just looked like we were nearly playing keep ball with 20 minutes to go because you're afraid to give it away because it's what might fucking happen. Ian and Matt, I have two questions here. I'm going to give you one each. Matt, I'll come to you first because you're the one that knows most about transfers on this podcast, so I'll come to you first. and it comes from Rob Mulholland. And his question is, will we actually buy any players in January? And if not, this will be a long and wasted season. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. We've all known it anyway. We've just kind of thought we'll just have to scrape by maybe the season. But now we're just literally hanging on to get to January. And we need, not just at the end of Jan, I'm saying, get something tied up early. So 1st of Jan, boom, we've got Coutinho and Sturridge. Something like that. We need...
Yep.
If we're not going to buy them all in Jan, we need at least, I'd say, a centre-mid defensive one and a centre-back, at the very least. We need two centre-backs, maybe a goalkeeper, and a midfielder. Don't know how many he's going to get, but there has to be. After today, I mean, after yesterday, I mean, there's no time when Jurgen Klopp's ever made a sub that early for tactical reasons. It has to have set in. And all I can see him now doing is going and saying, right, you fucked it up in the summer. I want someone off this list, and I want him 1st of Jan, get it sorted. Because he's going to be fuming, not just with the players, but I don't know how much he's been let down. None of us know except for Grizz, really. But we don't know how much he's been let down. But he can't have wanted Clavin as number three. Do you know what I mean? I think he's been told he was getting Van Dijk or whatever, and they couldn't get him. That's what's happened. So he must be fuming, players and staff, saying, we need to get this fucking sorted now.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I also think embarrassment might get the better of him now, and his calls are becoming embarrassing, you know, for himself and his backing of players that are clearly not good enough. Ian, I have one for you, and the one is, it comes from at Keith Lon, so KEITHLON, and his question was, is Karius or Ward good enough to give a go? And if so, which one would you go for?
Okay, now, that's like asking, would you prefer crabs or the clap?
Well,
your question is always, your answer is always the clap, isn't it?
Yeah, so always go with the clap, man.
Yeah,
those crabs itch. mate, to be honest with you, it doesn't matter. I mean, it sounds stupid, but it doesn't matter if they're good enough or not, because Mignolet definitely isn't good enough.
Isn't good enough.
So Dave, they are, at the very worst, they are the best of a bad bunch, do you know what I mean? So at least one of them needs to be given a go. Karius, if he doesn't make a stake for the number one keeper's jersey now, before the end of the season, then he's not good enough and he'll be sold in the summer. And we're all banging the Danny Ward drum, but he sees him in training every day. If he's good enough, then he'd get more games. I don't know. I'm tempted to give Ward a go just because I've seen more of the other two. You know what I mean? And they're not, in my opinion, they don't look good enough. Whereas Ward's a bit more of an unknown quantity. He's a big lad. He's a groch. He's a lot more vocal. And he mightn't have the athleticism of Karius or the flat face of Mignolet. But I would say, if I had to pick one of the three, I would just put Ward in. But I'll put it this way, if he doesn't put Karius in, Karius is finished. Simple.
Yeah.
If Mignolet starts the next game, then the other two are finished, because Mignolet is that bad at the minute that if Klopp still thinks he's the best of those three, then they are dog shit.
But you see, Ian, again, we've spoken about Klopp backing players, and he's dug himself another hole with this one, where he said that Mignolet is his number one keeper in the league and Karius will be Champions League or whatever else. I agree with you. I put Ward in simply because Mignolet shouldn't be at Liverpool Football Club. That's just my opinion. Karius, I feel a little bit sorry for him because of the way he's had to come in and out of the team. Okay, he hasn't covered himself in glory, you know, but there's a little bit of me just wants to say, do you know what, give him 10 games. No matter what, just give him 10 games and we know for definite. But my show will be Ward because, more than anything else, he's vocal. And I think he's the most confident of the three because he hasn't had to endure, you know, what Mignolet has gone through and then carry us to a certain point. Grizz, I was only messing with you. I'm not going to leave you out with this. January, what do you reckon?
It's going to be cold.
It's freezing, isn't it? It's going to be freezing. And listen, I said it clearly, man. If Klopp, and it's what Matt said as well. I think Matt said it earlier. If Klopp doesn't, I don't think it was Matt. I think it was someone on Twitter. But
doesn't even know where he is, Chris. Chris forgets that people are listening to this.
If Klopp,
I'm not fucking editing them. Fuck it.
All right. Well, what's the question?
I don't know, Chris. Listen,
January.
I'll see you next Sunday.
January. Listen, now on a serious note, if Klopp perseveres, and I said this in a tweet, if Klopp perseveres with Lovren and Mignolet for the remainder of the season, because I'm with you, Gav, enough is enough, and if that wasn't a watershed moment, if he does not replace them, either the goalkeeping situation, he won't go into the transfer market, Karius has to be given a chance now, and I would even put Mignolet number two. I'd say thank you very much for your service, and I've backed you for how long has he been there, guys? 3-5 years? 3-4 years, something like that? How long has he been there, right? Thank you for your services. He doesn't play for us again. Because he's got to turn cold now. January's going to be cold, but Klopp's got to turn cold on some players now. And he's got to say, enough's enough. He's got to get that centre-back. 100%
he's got to get that centre-back. I banged a tweet out yesterday, and I said, sometimes you learn more about a defeat. You learn more about your team by a bad defeat than you do about a brilliant victory. And I think that goes for not just the players, but for our coach as well. So
you're
for that next
you're not
game,
thinking it was more of a confirmation than learning. It was more of a confirmation in his mind over a few players there, yes.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what his mindset is, but I guarantee you, if he puts out the same side on Saturday, then he hasn't learned anything.
Yeah, that I can't say.
If he perseveres, look, I'm going to say it. I'm not going to sit on the fence. If he perseveres with Klopp, with Lovren and Mignolet, right, till the end of the season, we're not getting that top four with them two. If he perseveres with them, he's got to be strong now and make changes. And he's this is another problem. This is again his own doing, guys. He's got limited choices. I'll get that. And now people are going to say, well, now he's got to choose between Clavin or a young Gomez. Well, he's got to fucking do it. He's either got to change his philosophy, his whole playing style, like he did last season near the end. You know, when we talked about when we went more pragmatic, yeah, where we beefed it up in midfield and we went more defensive, right? Or either go at three at the back, which is totally against his philosophy, totally against his theory, his way of playing, or he changes the personnel. He's only got two options, Gav. And the third option...
Because at the moment... Sorry, mate, go ahead.
Yeah, just and the third option is the January. He's, you know, I said it, if we have contention, look, after all the doom and gloom, I still think we're going to get fourth, right? But we were expecting a bit more this season. That's the disappointment. And if January, if we're out of all competitions, we're out of contention for the, like, we're sitting sixth or seventh, like 7-8 points or fourth, he's in trouble, man. I'll tell you, he is in serious, serious pressure trouble because he's made a rod for his own back. He's done it. He's put faith in this crop of players, and they're, as you guys said, his body language was not good. It was on the sidelines like, you fucking wankers.
Yeah, because it has to be a frustration, Grizz, because it's just the simplest things that are creating goals. Like, you know, you don't mind if a fella goes to clear something and, you know, is off balance and hits it in his own goal or something along them lines, but it's simple, simple stuff. But look, enough of it. I've had enough. I'm not fucking talking about it anymore. Lads, we always have something random to talk about at the end, and I don't even know how many minutes we're going for now, but I don't really care. This week, it's I don't know what would we call it, Matt. What would you call it now? What we're going to talk about, would it be drunken adventures, or what way would you go with this?
The worst points of your life.
The worst points of your life
via alcohol.
Okay, well, I know you like the odd drink around Christmas and stuff like that. What is the worst point you've ever had?
I've got two. Well, I've got a good one of me, mate. I've got one of me. I'm actually the most embarrassed about it from anything I've ever done, ever, I think. It's fucking...
And does this include seeing your...
Exactly.
Grandmother-in-law.
Your granny's tits.
Fuck, I'm not. No, that was class. Mega pair of tits. Okay, nah, honestly, mate, it was, next day I was fucking, I got the fear bad. It was a banky weekend, and I'd been on it since like the Thursday, and this was the Sunday night. So I was already in a mess anyway. I was fucking going strong. And I was walking back from the bars around mine, and we were going back to a mate's house. It was about 1 a.m, wasn't too bad. And then we decided to cut across a very, very prestigious, famous golf course. I need a shit.
First out, Formby.
I need a bad shit. So I decide to crouch over and go in the first. And then
you tell me you done it on the green.
Nah, in the hole, mate. And then, honestly, mate, it came, the amount of it that came out, and it was beer shit and red wine shit.
Oh,
and
don't ever tell Andy from the Tippers about that, mate. He'll fucking shoot you in the face.
Then I
took his golf.
I love my golf, mate. I'm gutted. And then I ripped the flag off, and I used that to wipe.
I was
wipe.
Just going to ask you, what did you use to wipe?
Left it on there. And then, literally, it was me and my mates, just as I pulled my pants up to walk off, the sprinklers came on. And I'm sure there must have been someone, I know, shat ourselves, absolutely sprinted away. got on the beach and then went with my mates, said nothing. Oh, mate, I'm devastated about it, you know. It was such a low point in my life. I thought they were going to be DNA testing my shit to find me an F. I was a youngin, okay, forgive me. I was a youngin.
We won't name the golf
course. Oh, mate, whoever played that first, I was in the one.
the statue of limitations has probably ran out there anyway, so don't worry about it. I'll come back to you for your one about your mate in a minute. I'm not taking two stories like that in a row. Grizz, I know you don't drink because you're a strict Muslim, man. Two things you don't like is drink and rumour. But have you had any stories for me anyway?
I don't know why you're laughing about that. That's the funny thing. All right, anyway, forget that. Yeah, now, basically, once night out, you know, they used to use me as a driver. I was the Muslim driver. I used to just drive them there, like a cab driver. And they knew I wasn't going to drink, so I could drive there and drive back. And then one of these
In your dad's car, was it?
One of these guys, he was known to get, like, smashed every Saturday or Friday, whatever day. And he was a good friend of ours, but he was not close enough for me to know where he lives. So we used to ask him, like, where do you live? Like, he had to direct us. Can you imagine him trying to direct us to where he lives, like, when he's absolutely smashed to bits? Anyway, we get to his house, and he says, yeah, this is the one. Thank you. Thanks very much, lads. And we said, like, yeah, you're going to be all right? Yeah, yeah, I will be fine. Drop him off to his house, and I've driven home now. That's it. I'm thinking, all right, job done. Get inside, and about half an hour later, there's loud knocking on my door. And, it's only him. He's turned up at my house because he's been so drunk. He's realized that wasn't his house. And he's got a cab to my house, and I said, sorry, Grizz, that wasn't my house. I'm really lost. I don't know where I live, to be honest with you. And can I sleep round yours for the night? So the poor fella had to let him sleep round mine. Trying to explain to my Muslim parents and family that I've got a drunk white lad who wants to sleep in my room.
On the sofa.
On the sofa, you know. Was quite an experience, but yeah, I let him sleep the night, and the morning he was good as gold, because you know some of these guys are brilliant at sort of recovery. And he was like,
what
you cooking for breakfast?
He didn't know where he lived.
He didn't know where he lived, and in the morning he realized, oh yeah, I know where I live, and it was like next door to where he was knocking on the door.
Morning he's woke up and he's thought, thank God, I don't live with a Muslim fella. This isn't my house.
So you tried to fuck Grizz out.
Yeah, no, I think the smell, because, you know, like, we had, like, loads of, like, curry made in the morning for him breakfast, and the smell, like, proper. Do you know what, guys? Try that. Do you know, try that to recover. You know, you're always talking about what's the best, you know, way of recovering. Try a fucking really spicy curry.
Mate, you think I haven't had a curry in the morning? You're joking.
Yeah.
First thing you do is go to the fridge or the microwave and get the curry from last night. It does a fuck all.
If I want to know how to get over a hangover, I'm not speaking to a man that doesn't drink. What a fucking ridiculous notion.
It must have worked, innit? I'm trying to work it out.
I just wanted out of your house.
Terry.
He just fucking wasn't coming.
What? All that. But now it worked for him, and he was like, yeah, I remember everything. My hangover's cured, mate. And I was like, all right, thanks a lot. I don't want to see you again.
I'd say that was just fair. Just, you know what I mean? When you woke up, you thought, I better get myself sorted here. What the fuck is going on? Ian, what have you got for me, Ian?
Oh, mate, I've got quite a few, but half of them are getting me arrested. And,
sorry, yeah, so, I was just about to say, listen, don't say anything libelous, please.
No, well I've got two. I've got one of me mate... He was meeting his in-laws for the first time.
Okay.
And his in-laws were quite posh, you know what I mean? And where we grew up was rough. And they all went out, had a meal and all that. And then the parents went home and he stayed out with his bear for a bit longer. But he was staying in their house. And he went home bladdered, and he was known for being bladdered. Put it this way, he was voted in our school as the man most likely to rape somebody. He got that accolade. Sake. And he's now a copper. Do you know what I mean? So make it that what you will. But he got that drunk that he was like crouched over having a shit in his in-laws' wardrobe while they were asleep in the bed next to him. He thought he was on the toilet. Like, they woke up and went mental. Like, and he's married to the bird now as well. You think they'd be gone. But he didn't show his face for about 3 weeks after that. He was mortified.
Is that it? Good lad.
And then me, we had I think I was only about 16. And my mate's mum and dad went away. So we all went round to his and got bladdered, you know, thinking we were like boss of drinking. And we probably had about four wine gums and half a bottle of fairy liquid or something. But we were all blitzed. And you didn't want to, you know, you don't want to be the first one to fall asleep in a group of lads because it's just dangerous, isn't it? It's dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous.
It's the only time in my life I've ever done it and I will never do it again because I took the knock and I must have been in a deep, like, sort of coma state because when I woke up, my mate was just in front of me with, like a tub of curry powder just right by my face and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And he went, no, nothing, and just walked away. So I went, what are you doing with that? And then as I stood up, I heard something clang on my head. And then, so there was like a big mirror on the wall, and with toxic glue, they had stuck a metal spatula to my head. cotton wool buds. I had like loads of like fucking, like, silver spoons. Honest to God, mate, it stuck like about 30 different items to my head, right? So I went upstairs, I was like, and they all ran away because I've got a bit of a temper, do you know what I mean? Who wouldn't in that situation anyway? So I went upstairs, but they'd stuck it on with toxic glue.
I've never had a spatula stuck to my head. I don't know what way my reaction will be. I don't know how annoyed
I'd be all right.
I couldn't get the stuff off. And as I was pulling it off, I was crying because it was hurting that much. But as I was pulling it, it was pulling my skin off. Me barn it, like I had, my hair was coming out in clumps. So I got as much out of it as I could, off my head as I could, and I went to the hairdressers or the barbers at like 7 o'clock in the morning with a hoodie up. And when I went in, I just pulled my hoodie down, and he just burst out laughing in me face, the fella, because I had like, I still had half my mate's kitchen on my head. I couldn't get it off. So he was washing my hair as he was cutting it, and then he was like, he shaved it, mate. You should have seen the kip in my head when I'd finished. I looked like an atlas. You know what I mean? Bald patches everywhere. My mates didn't show the faces for weeks. I was fucking angry, man. And at one point, I didn't think my hair was going to grow back. I looked ill. I looked like I had, like, alopecia or something. But it took a while and it came back. Like, but, yeah, mate, don't ever try and pull a metal spatula off your head if it's glued on. It hurts, man.
Good advice.
Yeah, and it probably happens. It's more common than you think.
Well, you don't see that on fucking Celebrity Bake Off, do you? They don't teach you everything you need to know.
And no, today, that'd be amazing.
Flipping eggs.
Caramel week now with somebody with a spatula fucking stuck to their head.
No, I didn't hate, man.
Matt, you said you had one for your mate, so you go on, you might as well do it.
Nah, we're running over, mate. I'll save it for a different time. Don't worry about it.
You're going to save it, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You're a tease. Lads, it's been a bad weekend, results-wise. But look, we get back on it next week. That's all you can do. It's been the Fatback 4. It's been episode 8. It's been thanks to Grizz, Ian, Matt. I've been your host, Gav. We'll talk to you again next week. Over and out.